My name is Wyatt Corson, and I love spending the weekends with my grandkids. Their names are Matt and Tracy, and they always come by at the end of every week to spend some time with me. We usually spend these days at the park having fun, and one thing that we always do after a long day of playing around is to go eat at the nearest McDonald's. Just like everyone else in the United States, my grandkids are obsessed with the notorious Happy Meals, and while I always take them to get their meals, I find myself getting tense because every time I walk through the doors of a McDonald's restaurant, I get shivers up my spine. Now, I'm sure you're wondering, what could I possibly be afraid of in a McDonald's restaurant? But the thing is, I've always felt like this since that fateful incident. It happened on the 9th of November, 1955. I was 22 years old at the time, and if I'm remembering correctly, I had recently gotten a job as a taxi driver. My job took me all over Downey, as I would spend the whole day driving people around, and I would always come back late at night. That day, I was supposed to take a woman to her friend's house. I asked where her friend lived, and she told me he lived very close to 10207 Lakewood Boulevard at Florence Avenue in Downey. I remember being really tired, as I had driven around a lot of passengers that day, but I managed to muster up the strength to do it. So she got into the car and I started taking her to the address. I picked her up around 2:30 a.m. and we finally arrived at her destination by 3 a.m. I put on the radio during the drive back home, and on the station I tuned into, they were talking about some of the recent ghastly things that had been happening in Downey. For starters, a couple of mentally deranged patients had escaped from the Downey Asylum, and ever since these dangerous patients escaped, a lot of people had been going missing in town. There was no hard evidence yet, but the cops believed the deranged patients were behind the strange disappearances in town, as most of them were insane murderers. The last thing the station said before I turned it off was, "Remember to be careful, folks, and please try not to stay out late in Downey. The cops have rounded up some of the escaped patients, but there are still many of them out there." I already knew I wasn't supposed to be out this late, as it was 3 in the morning, but with the massive fear going around town and the lack of drivers at night, I found myself making a lot of money when working the nights. I knew it was risky, but I needed the money, and I also knew how to protect myself if anything happened. I put on some music after that announcement to lighten the mood, and as I drove on, I came across a very strange sight. I was at the McDonald's restaurant on 10207 Lakewood Boulevard at Florence Avenue in Downey, California. Now, I know seeing a McDonald's restaurant in this day and age is a regular thing, as they are basically everywhere, but in my time, they were a very rare sight. This was because the restaurants were still owned by the original McDonald's brothers, Richard and Maurice McDonald, and the restaurant wasn't really a mass franchise as Ray Kroc hadn't bought them out yet. I also didn't know they started offering 24-hour services, as the early McDonald's restaurants didn't offer that. But that wasn't the major thing that seemed strange to me. No, what really seemed strange were the 25-plus people who were seated outside the restaurant and eating burgers at 3 a.m. I didn't believe my eyes at first, as I figured there was no way these many people would be eating out here this late, knowing fully well that the streets were dangerous. But as I drove closer, I realized my eyes weren't playing tricks on me, as all those people were actually there. I decided to drive up to the restaurant, and I remember seeing the massive neon chef called Speed lighting up the driveway. Most of you don't know this, but Speed was McDonald's original mascot before he was replaced by Ronald McDonald in 1963. After I'd parked my car, I got down and made my way to the restaurant. To make things a bit clearer, I'd like to point out that at that time, McDonald's wasn't really a full-blown restaurant. It was more of a hamburger stand, as you couldn't dine in the restaurant like the McDonald's are nowadays. But there were chairs outside where people could sit and eat if they didn't want to leave. And I remember being very perplexed seeing over 20 people on those chairs at that time of night. I tried to come up with a feasible explanation as to why they were all here, but I couldn't, so I decided to order a burger and talk to some of them. I walked up to the counter to order a hamburger for 15 cents, as that's how much they were sold for at the time. But before the cook could take my order, I noticed a 12-year-old child staring at me with a strange look in his eyes. At first, I thought there was something on my face, as I figured that was why he was staring at me like that. But I soon realized that there was nothing strange on my face. Even after confirming this, the child kept staring at me. And while he didn't say anything, it looked like he was trying to tell me I didn't belong there. I was about to say something to the child when the cook came to the stand and took my order. The man asked, "Hey, sir, what would you like me to get you?" So I told him, "A hamburger, please." The cook then said, "And would you like a 20-cent milkshake to wash that burger down?" So I replied with, "Yes, you can add a milkshake." As the cook went to get my order, I noticed something very odd in the hamburger stand. The cook was the only one there. I'd been to a McDonald's hamburger stand before, and there were usually two or three people working the stand, so seeing him doing everything alone seemed strange to me. When the man came back with my burger and milkshake, I tried to make some small conversation, so I asked him, "I didn't know McDonald's started working at night. Is this new 24-hour service here to stay, or is it just a one-night thing?" I noticed the cook got really nervous when I asked him this question as he started to stutter. "No, no, it's not a 24-hour service thing. I just work the late night shift sometimes." I could tell he was hiding something now, so I said, "Well, it's a pretty busy night for you, having all these people out here at 3 in the morning. Immediately, as I finished my sentence, the cook froze. His eyes were bulging red now as he looked me dead in the eyes and said, "You can see him too?" Shocked at his response, I backed away from the counter. I thought he was playing a sick prank on me at first, but before I could respond, I heard the sound of police sirens. I looked to the driveway to see a cop car pulling up towards the restaurant, and two police officers walked out of the car. I knew they had been patrolling the streets at night due to the recent events in town. I opened my mouth to greet the officers, but before I could say anything, one of the officers said, "What are you two doing out here by this time? We didn't know McDonald's started working at 3:45 in the morning." His statement made me confused as I wondered why he used the words "you two" when over 25 people were sitting at the restaurant. I wanted to ask the officer what he meant when he said, "License and registration, please." I quickly did as he asked as I showed him my papers, and when I was done, he asked the cook in the hamburger stand. Unlike me, the cook didn't give his papers to the officers, so he was asked to step out of the stand. But the cook refused, so the officer pulled out his gun and said, "Please, step out of the hamburger stand, sir. I'm not going to ask you again." And with no other options, the cook did as they asked. Immediately, as the man stepped out into the driveway, I saw a look of realization on the police officer's face as he shouted, "It's him! It's Tim Miller! I've just found one of the most dangerous mental patients that escaped from the asylum." After this statement, the officer immediately went to restrain the man with his other colleague coming to assist him, and as this bizarre arrest went down, I noticed another very strange thing that didn't make sense. For starters, the 25-plus people that were sitting and eating their burgers didn't show any reaction to what was going on. And that was very strange to me, as every normal human being would show some reaction after finding out that it was an escaped mental patient that just made the food they were all eating. But they didn't care, to be honest. It seemed like they couldn't see what was going on as they just kept chatting and eating. As the cops dragged the man called Tim Miller away, he started to scream, "I'm not crazy! I'm not crazy! He can see them too!" The officer who took notice of this then walked up to me and said, "Are you with this man? Are you also an escapee? What is he talking about?" I was scared now, so I said, "No, officer. I just arrived here like all these other people." The cop, who was visibly confused, raised his gun at me and said, "What other people? There's no one here. Are you sure you're not one of the mental patients?" The other officer who had put Tim Miller in the car then told his colleague,
"Even if he is an escaped mental patient, I don't think he'd tell you, Frank. He's clearly crazy, so Let's just take him in and confirm it at the asylum.
I was annoyed now, so I said, "What do you mean there aren't other people? Can't you see them right here, eating burgers?" The cop was convinced I was crazy now, as he told the other officer to restrain me, but before they could, I shouted,
"What is wrong with you people? Can't you see the 12-year-old boy standing here?"
And as I touched the boy's shoulder to make my point, I felt shivers go up my spine. The child's skin was as cold as ice, and immediately I touched him. Each and every one of them stopped eating and looked at me. I instantly took my hands off, as I knew full well what I touched wasn't human. His skin wasn't supposed to feel like that, and as my mind struggled to make sense of what was going on, all the 25 people vanished before my very eyes. That was my breaking point as I fell to the floor screaming. The cops, who were convinced I was crazy, now restrained me and took me in. I didn't blame them because even though I knew I wasn't a mental patient, I had completely lost my mind at that moment. I was taken to the Downey Asylum that night, and the staff confirmed to the police that I wasn't one of the mental patients who had escaped. But even though this was cleared up, the cops still insisted that I had clearly lost my mind and I should be checked in. I spent my days with numerous psychologists, and I told them everything that happened that night. Not many of them believed me, and the ones who did asked me to give a detailed description of the people I saw. Shockingly enough, all the descriptions of the faces I could remember matched the ones of many people that had gone missing in Downey. The case baffled both the cops and psychologists as they wondered why I saw those missing people that night. People who the two police officers assured everyone weren't there. Investigations were carried into the matter, and it was eventually revealed that Tim Miller, the mental patient who was caught on that night, might have been behind their disappearances. For starters, the man suffered from a peculiar case of alternate personality disorder. He had four different character traits, one of them being a cook, and another being a violent killer. The cops believed Tim had broken into that McDonald's restaurant after hours and posed as a cook to lure in potential customers. They then theorized that after serving them their food, Tim would switch personalities and kill each and every one of them, a fate that I might have met that night. The McDonald's restaurant further proved this claim as they confirmed they had reported a used kitchen whenever they arrived in the mornings, and they also said they didn't know who Tim Miller was. McDonald's further stated that they also didn't offer 24-hour service at this time. While this theory seemed like the best possible option, none of these claims were ever confirmed as the supposed perpetrator was deemed mentally insane, so his words and confessions weren't clear and the bodies of the victims were never found. No feasible explanation was also given as to why I saw those people, and after a year of undergoing treatment, I was released back into the real world. Even at 89 years of age, I can still remember that night very clearly. That particular McDonald's still stands to this day in Downey as it escaped modernization. The McDonald's restaurant still didn't offer 24-hour service after this incident, and it wasn't until they were bought out by Ray Kroc that a few branches started offering the service in the year 2002, nearly 47 years after this incident. I know it's been a very long time since it happened, and I kept quiet about it as I didn't want anyone to see me as a crazy person. This is why I always get shivers every time I walk into a McDonald's restaurant, as I sometimes see people that I believe don't belong there. I try to brush off that strange feeling as I don't want to be called crazy. But deep down, every time I pass that particular McDonald's restaurant in Downey, I always wonder if those missing people still appear there every night to order a Happy Meal, just like the rest of us.
This story was taken from the personal diary of my father, Wyatt Coulson. I'm his daughter, Jeanette Coulson, and sadly, Wyatt passed away recently. I found this in his diary when I was clearing out his things, so I decided to share his story with the rest of the world.
As a chief magazine editor, I am always working extra hours in my office. I enjoy my work and hardly ever complain about work pressure. However, this also means I barely get time to cook lunch or dinner. There is a McDonald's a few blocks ahead of my office. I usually visited it at least 4 to 5 times a week. I mean, who doesn't love a cheesy burger on a weekday? But I've always had this odd feeling of being watched since the moment I stepped in. Until today, it's not stopped. So, it all started 3 years ago when I took up this position. I knew it was going to be a demanding role, but it promised the professional exposure I wished for. I still remember the first time I walked through the double doors of the McDonald's. The distinct smell of freshly brewed coffee, cheeseburgers, and a set of eyes followed me throughout the room. I ordered my food and sat at the last table beside the window, looking at the hustle and bustle of the street while I enjoyed my snack. Sometime later, I was sipping my Coke when the hair on the nape of my neck rose and I felt the weird stare again. From the moment I entered the McDonald's, I felt as if someone was keeping a watch on me. For the first time, I scanned the store and spotted an old, creepy-looking man sitting on a table near the fire exit. He was not eating anything, just sitting at the table and staring at me. He never blinked, just stared straight at me. His eyes were red and had dark bags under them. It looked as if he had not slept in days or had a hangover. However, nothing seemed to faze him. He just kept looking at me, following my every move. I was a bit spooked, but tried to ignore the whole ordeal with the man. Soon I finished and walked up to the exit. He followed me with his eyes and gave me a creepy smile as I stepped out of the door. A few days later, when I went there again, I was immediately greeted with his creepy stare. No doubt, the man was sitting at the same table scanning me with his eyes and keeping an eye over my every action. I ignored it, ate my food, and left quickly. Just as last time, he smiled at me, displaying his rotten, crooked teeth. But this time, he waved at me. Spooked, I moved out as quickly as I could and sped walk to my office just in case he followed. But he never did. Later that week, when I went to grab a bite again, the man was sitting at his usual table, staring at me and smiling. I knew this was odd, so I approached the girl at the counter and pointed at the man and asked about him. To my utter surprise, the girl looked at me funny and said in a very plain tone that the table was empty and no man was sitting there. I was certainly very shocked, but kept my cool and described the man. I asked her if a person with a similar appearance had visited the store ever. The girl said no and took my order. The worst part was, while I was conversing with the girl, the man was sitting at the table and smiling his creepy smile at me. It felt as if he was amused by my panic. I was stressed and scared. It was confusing. Only I could see the man and the girl on the counter couldn't. I blamed it on stress and the lack of sleep. I collected my order and decided to eat it in my cabin. When I stepped out of the door with my purse and food in hand, the man smiled, waved, and winked at me. Every time I walk out, I felt like he did something more. It scared me, and I decided not to visit the place for a while. A few weeks passed, and the incident at McDonald's had totally flown out of my mind. It was late, around 9 in the evening, and I was driving my car out of my parking lot when I spot the same man standing across the street. At that moment, all I could think about was getting the hell out of that deserted parking lot. The man stood there and looked at me with a creepy expression. A ton of questions ran across my mind, but I had no time to find the answers to any of them. My whole body was in flight mode as I drove past him straight home. Once I was settled in, my mind was going round and round about all the possibilities. Had he followed me to my office? Did he know any of my personal information? Why was he following me? Did he know where I lived? And more importantly, why was I the only one able to see him? It was all so scary. I again thought this was a side effect of my busy schedule and stressed lifestyle. Before I saw a doctor, I decided to take a few days off to relax and calm my mind. Over the next few days, I spent my time cooking, reading, going to the park for walks and relaxing. Not once did I spot the man on my week off, and I was convinced that I was seeing things due to stress. However, it all changed the night before the day I was supposed to get back to work. I was sipping tea on my balcony when, on the sidewalk, right in front of my home, stood the creepy man from McDonald's. I was shocked and scared to death. The teacup slipped out from my hands, and I ran inside, shutting all the windows and blinds. I turned off all the lights and decided to peek out to check if he was still there. When I looked out, the sidewalk was empty. There was no sign of the man. The next day, I decided to visit the McDonald's again to confront the man myself, as I was certain he would be there. When I entered the place, his usual table was empty, and the manager of the store was standing at the counter. I approached him and narrated the incident. After hearing my story, the man revealed a shocking truth that cracked the floor beneath my feet. Mr. Dudley, the manager, told me what had happened in the McDonald's a few years ago. He said,
"When this place was newly opened, we had a few factory workers visit us regularly for lunch. The man you described was one of them. One afternoon during the lunch rush, we had three masked men come in and rob this place. The workers tried to unarm the masked robbers, but by the time the cops were called, one of the robbers had shot this man, and he died on the spot. It was a hit-and-run case. The masked men were never found. The worker never got his justice. Many customers before you had claimed to see the man smile and follow them around."
I had no idea what to say to him. What should I do, Mr. Dudley, for the man to stop following me?
"Honestly, I don't know what you should do. The people who had claimed to see the man never visited here again, so I know nothing of this matter or what happened to them."
The spirit of a dead worker was following me. It seemed to get one step closer every time I saw it. What do you guys think I should do? Why did the spirit choose to follow me? What must have happened to the people before me? And most importantly, how will this end? As it still follows me, I sometimes see it in the lobby of my office, in the park, below my window, and many other such places. What should I do to make it stop?
When I was 33, I was the sheriff of this small town. Being a sheriff of a small town comes with a lot of late-night shifts, always being on high alert, taking care of the old folk in town, and hardly any personal life. That's why when I was single at 33, it was hard as it is to date, let alone have a stable relationship. So, when I walked into our town's only McDonald's that night to grab a quick bite, it was no surprise that I was dumbstruck, looking at the beautiful woman standing behind the cash counter. Stacy Harris was a stunning woman, with blonde hair, blue eyes, a slim figure, and cute smile. We hit it off instantly, and soon, she was my girlfriend. It didn't hurt that, like me, she too had a late-night shift at the McDonald's and had her mornings off. It was common for me to stop by every other night to eat a snack and check on her. As she was new in town, recently divorced and trying to get a fresh start, I was more than willing to give her just that. The first incident happened on one of those nights when I was swamped with work and couldn't visit Stacy at McDonald's. I clearly remember her hysteric crying voice on the phone when she called me to come get her. The moment I reached the place, it was completely trashed. The tables were turned over, The ketchup and dips were all over the place, and my girlfriend was crouched behind the counter, crying. Back in the day, CCTV cameras weren't that common, and as it was a weekday, there was no one at the McDonald's except her. So no one witnessed the man in the hoodie who had barged into the place, trashed it, and threatened to kill her. It was also unusual that, as a first respondent, even I didn't know what to make of it. Our town was a pretty quiet one, with hardly any issues. So for someone to trash a fast food restaurant and threaten a woman was strange. Nevertheless, as a sheriff and a responsible and loving boyfriend, I comforted Stacy and took her home while asking my backup to take over the situation. The second incident wasn't a trashed restaurant, but a phone call to Stacy's home. Some guy with a deep, raspy voice had called her and threatened to kill her. These calls and threats just got more and more frequent. Sometimes there was a dead cat on her porch or a dead bird. Once, the stalker went as far as to break into her house while she was away and trashed her bedroom. No wonder all these incidents drove her crazy. Soon, our relationship was facing the backlash of the constant stalking, threats, and dead animals. Stacy was so scared to get out of the house or to work. Our late-night meetups at the McDonald's had stopped. I was so worried and stressed for her all the time. Being the sheriff of the town, me and my team were investigating this case with great effort. Surprisingly, the incidents, meaning the phone calls, the dead animals, the break-ins, only happened when Stacy was alone or when there was no one at her home. I had my cops patrol around her home several times day and night. I stayed at her place whenever I could, but everything seemed normal when I was around or when my men patrolled the place. This got me thinking that maybe someone who was very close to Stacy or from within the police department was behind the stalking. Being the sheriff of the town, it was shameful that I couldn't protect my own girlfriend. My first suspect was her ex-husband. When Dan was brought in for interrogation, turns out he too had received a couple of calls from the same stalker. This was very absurd, and our investigation was hitting dead end after dead end. Nothing led to anything. There were no clues. Whenever we tried to investigate the home invasions, we never found a single clue showing the presence of the stalker inside the home. This so-called stalker was either very good at it, or maybe we were all being misled and the truth lay right under our noses. My tipping point was when I was staying the night with Stacy, and I woke up to a burning basement. I ran upstairs to find my girlfriend knocked down on the bed, and a broken vase lay right next to her on the floor. Someone had forcibly entered the house while I was asleep on the living room couch, had managed to knock my girlfriend unconscious, and lit the basement aflame without waking me up. I called the fire department and carried Stacy out of the house. After the fire, Stacy and I officially broke up. It was sad to lose such an amazing woman, but the damage done by the fire had killed the remaining hope and spark inside Stacy. She was severely depressed and unable to have a relationship with anyone, not even herself. She was soon admitted to the psychiatric ward and taken care of there. I visited her a couple of times, but I couldn't watch the woman I loved diminish in front of my eyes. We kept on looking for the stalker, but found nothing. After a few months of being in the care, she was released and better than before. As soon as she returned to her house, the stalking continued and drove her insane all over again. But it all ended on a fateful night when she was kidnapped from the parking lot of a local mall, and her dead body was found next to an abandoned home near the creek. It devastated me. The case was officially closed, and the dead body had no DNA or clues on who killed her. Apparently, according to the autopsy, she had overdosed on drugs. But Stacy did not do drugs at all, and I knew that for sure. It still brings me to tears thinking about her death and how she might have struggled. The death of Stacy Harris somehow made it to national TV, and all the theory, speculations, and information about it was broadcasted to the world to see. The FBI stepped in next and tried to investigate the case anew. I had almost lost hope when the FBI agents revealed the shocking truth behind Stacy Harris's murder, which shook the whole town and the nation, and most of all, me. The facts that no one had seen the stalker, heard the phone calls, or that there was no DNA of any sort of evidence of a stalker, were proof that there was no stalker. Stacy Harris did everything to herself, as she was a patient of a rare mental disorder called DID, Dissociative Identity Disorder. Her stalker, or the man in the black hoodie, was none other than Stacy herself, or should I say, her alter ego. She was the one who kidnapped and killed herself. The fact that such a wonderful and loving woman was going through something like this was sad. But even more heartbreaking was the fact that me, being her lover, failed to see it.